Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. We may all need a lot of help. What's going on in Ukraine and with NATO is rather nerve-wracking because the situation appears to be that NATO has shown its hand. Hal Turner seems to have put his finger right on it. Let me lay a little preliminary background here. Air defense systems have activated near the Crimean Bridge. There's this absolutely fantastic bridge. It's just an engineering marvel connecting Russia to Ukraine. I believe the Ukrainians would like nothing better than to take it out. An air defense system has now been activated by the Russians in the vicinity of the bridge, an advisor to Crimea's governor said Thursday evening. Videos showed what looked like a missile piercing the night sky and sounds of explosions. Air defense systems have been activated in Kursk. No danger for the city and the bridge. There was a sound similar to that of thunder, car alarms going off. TASS, the Russian news agency, reported citing the Kursk city council. Social media have been sharing videos that seem to depict the incident, a bright object moving across the night sky looking like a missile. Also, videos capturing the sound of one or several explosions. It appears to have been taken out en route. The operator of the Crimean Bridge, which links the peninsula with the Russian mainland, told journalists there have been no traffic disruptions. Vladimir Rogov, a member of the Russian Military Civilian Administration, said on his Telegram channel, according to preliminary data, a Ukrainian drone was shot down far away from the Crimean Bridge. Thursday's activity comes amid a series of incidents in Crimea recently, where Tuesday, a temporary ammo depot in northern Crimea was targeted in what the Russian Defense Ministry called an act of sabotage. Ammunition stored at the site exploded, causing damage to power lines, a power station, the railroad, and several residential houses. Last week, a fire at a military airfield near the resort of Kovodovka and a subsequent wave of explosions claimed the life of one civilian with 14 others injured. Russian authorities did not report any findings indicating foul play behind the fire. While stopping short of claiming responsibility, several top officials in Kiev have hinted Ukrainian forces may have been behind the incident. They warn more such fires and explosions could be expected in Crimea, and also threatened to target the Kerch Bridge. The U.S. government has given Ukraine a go-ahead to target Crimea. This is absolutely insane. Here's further from antiwar.com elaborating. Ukraine's defense minister says there are no restrictions on using U.S.-provided weapons in attacks on Crimea. This is about as ludicrous as it gets, as totally irresponsible, making the United States a major target for retaliation. And believe me, the Russians will find the right time and the right place to make it happen. A senior Biden admin official told Politico, the U.S. supports Ukraine striking Crimea, which Russia has controlled since 2014, but which neither Washington nor Kiev recognize as Russian territory. They had, after all, an international referendum. It was recognized. They voted Crimea to rejoin Russia. All of Ukraine has been a part of Russia for hundreds of years, by the way. This is all novel in terms of its geography. The official said the U.S. considers strikes on Ukrainian soil self-defense, and that includes Crimea. We don't select targets, of course. Everything we provided is for self-defense. Any target they choose to pursue on sovereign Ukrainian soil is by definition self-defense, ignoring completely that Russia claims Crimea on very legitimate grounds. The comments came after a series of explosions at Russian military facilities, including a major at the Sakhalin Air Base in Crimea, that reportedly destroyed 9 Russian aircraft. Officially, Kiev hasn't taken credit, but they've strongly hinted at Ukraine's involvement. While the recent incident appeared to be sabotage, Ukrainian officials have said they are preparing to use U.S.-provided weapons, such as HIMARS rocket system, to attack Crimea. Washington doesn't want Crimea using U.S. weapons on Russian territory, but Crimea appears to be fair game since the U.S. considers Ukraine, ignoring completely the Russian claim. Ukrainian defense minister said there are no restrictions on occupied territories of Ukraine. When asked by antiwar.com if the U.S. ban on Ukraine using U.S.-provided arms on Russian territory applied to Crimea, the State Department replied, Crimea is Ukraine. U.S.-backed attacks on Crimea risk provoking Moscow. Russian officials have made clear they will view such operations as a major escalation. Former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, who currently serves as deputy chair of Russia's Security Council, warned already back in July that Ukrainian attacks on Crimea would mean doomsday for the Ukrainian leadership. Medvedev also said the fact that Ukraine and NATO nations don't recognize Korea as Russia is a threat to Moscow. If any state, either Ukraine or a NATO country, and that would include the United States, thinks that Crimea is not part of Russia, it is a systemic threat to us. Mark my words. Moreover, Putin warns Macron, the president of France, who appears to have stolen his election, where millions of Le Pen ballots were torn. I mean, it's very easy to do this. In France, if you have a ballot that's at all torn or defaced, they won't count. So it appears that those who were counting the ballots were simply tearing the Le Pen ballots, and that there have been millions found that would have replaced this stooge, this New World Order psychopath, Emmanuel Macron, with a woman who actually would put France first. She would be to France as Trump is to the United States. With rising tensions and continuing shelling at Ukraine's nuclear power plant at Zaporizhia, in nearby areas, Russian President Putin and his French counterpart, Macron, have discussed the need to send UN monitors to assess the besieged facility. Both Ukraine and Russia have accused each other of planting provocations and false flags at the site, Amid dire warnings of a possible nuclear catastrophe at Europe's largest nuclear plant. After a call between Putin and Macron on Friday, the first in 3 months, the Kremlin issued a statement reiterating the Russian offer to provide security for an international atomic energy mission. The statement said Moscow confirmed its readiness to provide the IAEA inspectors with the necessary assistance. Putin also emphasized that Ukraine's shelling of the plant could cause a large-scale catastrophe, telling Macron that inspectors should visit ZNPP as soon as possible. A French readout of the call said the two leaders will speak on this subject again in the next few days following discussions between the technical teams and before the deployment of the mission. This is a major power plant. It's the largest nuclear power plant in all of Europe. While Ukraine asserts Russian forces are attacking the ZNPP, Moscow has controlled the plant and surrounding areas since March, giving it little reason to risk a major nuclear incident that would imperil ethnic Russians under its protection at the Zaporizhzhia Oblast. Moreover, although Russian controls a plant, it's still run by Ukrainian operators. Russia has voiced ever greater concern over the situation, calling for independent inspectors to review evidence they say will prove who is responsible for attacks at the site. For weeks, the area has seen frequent shelling, and a Russian-backed official in the oblast recently accused Kiev of attacking the power plant repeatedly with U.S.-provided M777 howitzers. On Friday, Moscow submitted a letter to the U.N. Security Council warning of Kiev's planned provocations at the ZNPB. Ukraine's Energoatom State Nuclear Company claims Moscow plans to switch off the functioning power blocks of the plant, cut it off from Ukraine's power grid, and reconnect to the Russian grid in an attempt to deprive the country of a major power source. Petro Kotin, head of Energoatom, told Reuters, decoupling and reconnecting the plant is a technically difficult process, noting the Russian military is looking for diesel to keep the nuclear fuel cooling system working once the external power supply is cut. While there are backup diesel generators at the site, it remains unclear if the supplies are sufficient. Igor Kirillov, a Russian Defense Ministry official, said the ZNPP's backup support systems had been damaged as a result of attacks and might have to be shut down. These attacks, mind you, are by Ukraine. The Reuters report adds, if cooling system failed, the nuclear reaction would slow, but a reactor would heat up very swiftly. At such high temperatures, hydrogen could be released from the zirconium cladding, and the reactor would start to melt down. Kiev claims Russian shelling earlier this month damaged 3 power lines connecting the plant to Ukraine's power grid, though Moscow said the Ukrainians were behind the shelling, in line with conflicting narratives offered by both sides throughout the conflict. Secretary of the Russian Security Council, Nikolai Patrushev, has also accused Washington of encouraging Kiev to attack the plant. He said if there is a technological disaster, its consequences will be felt in every corner of the world, adding, Washington, London, and their accomplices will bear full responsibility for that. For its part, Moscow has defended its military presence at the facility, with Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rabkov stating the troops are there to prevent a disastrous Chernobyl scenario. On Wednesday, NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg declared Russia is using the ground around the nuclear power plant is a staging area as a platform to launch artillery attacks on Ukrainian forces, which Moscow has denied. All the NATO forces, by the way, are just lying their faces off. They have from the beginning. This is a massive propaganda onslaught, making Russia out to be the bad guys when, in fact, they're actually the good. The Russian Defense Ministry said Russian troops have no heavy weapons either on the territory of the station or in areas around it. There are only guard units. Russia has alleged that Washington Kiev planned to trigger an accident at the ZNPB deliberately, citing the threat of the core overheating. Moscow's defense ministry also said Kiev's forces were being deployed in the area to hit the plant with artillery strikes from the city of Nikopol, adding blame for the consequences of the strikes will be placed on the Russian armed forces. Wrongly, of course, but that's what they're going to do. Ukraine's defense ministry says the Russians are planning a large-scale terrorist attack at the ZNPB and plan to pin it on Kiev. Clearly propaganda, so when what they do causes a catastrophe, they'll have already blamed Russia. When Russia has no possible interest in doing this whatsoever, while U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price argued that false flag operation would be right out of the Russian playbook, more propaganda this time from the United States. Even before the war began, however, Price and other U.S. officials notoriously accused the Russians of planting false flags in Ukraine without providing evidence. Likewise, the Pentagon is squarely blaming Russia for the deal, with a senior defense official telling reporters that we see Russia's current actions in and around this plan as really the height of irresponsibility. When in fact, it's obvious it's a Ukrainian shelling, and Hal Turner explains the game plan. I think he's got it right. Some residents of the area began to flee to neighboring European countries, though only women and children are being permitted. Kiev has banned men aged 18 to 60 from leaving the country, so they may be conscripted to keep the war going. While Russia has rejected UN proposals for the plan to be demilitarized, Bruce Gagnon, coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, recently sent a letter to UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemning Kiev for the dire situation. Now, here I think is where we get to the bottom line. This is on my blog. Remember now, you need the H. It's jameshfetzer.org, no longer jamesfetzer.org. If you go to jamesfetzer.org, you'll get documents in the case of Posner versus Fetzer, where the judge has authorized their taking my blog. This is all improper. It's all wrong. I explain how this has been done in violation of the statutes that will have this massive financial liability against me. It can only be satisfied by financial means. The blog and even the book, which a judge also claims Posner is now entitled, that it would be Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill to promote gun control. They're clearly doing this purely to deprive the public of access to the vast repository of information I have about Sandy Hook. Here's, so you can find the Hal Turner at jameshfetzer.org, jameshfetzer.org. The end game is out in the open. Radiation leak from Ukraine nuclear plant will trigger NATO Article 5. That's, of course, the article of collective self-defense. Hal Turner. Editor's note. Among the most important points made by Hal Turner occur in his commentary toward the end specifically. Ukraine is using Western-supplied weapons to attack a nuclear power plant inside their own country. And the West says that if there is a radiation leak from the plant, that will automatically trigger NATO Article 5 of collective self-defense. Well, Hal Turner writes, no, it won't. Ukraine is not a member of NATO. Worse, it is Ukraine attacking the nuclear power plant. So if radiation leak occurs, it'll have been Ukraine that caused it, not Russia. It will have been the U.S. and NATO who facilitated it by arming Ukraine. Does NATO plan on invoking Article 5 to attack itself? Because if a radiation leak happens, it's 99% the fault of the U.S. and NATO. They're supplying Ukraine with the weapons being used to target the nuclear power plant. Don't be surprised now, I add, if they claim a radiation leak triggers Article 5, even though it should not. And don't be surprised when Russia cleans their clock. They are prepared for this. We are not. Here's Hal Turner. Nuclear war with Russia seems to now be a deliberate planned action by the West, and this weekend, elected members of the two most influential Western governments tipped their hand. With what they said, nuclear war may be only days away. Take this to heart. Only days away. As most readers are aware, much has been made of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine, which was taken over by Russia very early in their special military operation to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine. The reason Russia took control of the plant early is that if there is any kind of radiation leak from the plant, local prevailing winds would not only create a deadly threat to Russian troops operating in Ukraine, the winds would also carry radiation into Russia. As one might expect, Russia does not want either of these occurrences. So Russia, being a superpower against whom Ukraine stands no chance at all prevailing, took control of the plant, continued allowing Ukrainian experts to run it, and all was well until about 2 weeks ago, when Ukraine began firing artillery shells toward the plant. Ukraine plans that Russia has troops in the plant, and those troops are allegedly carrying out attacks against Ukraine. Russia denies carrying out any attacks to the plant and demands that Ukraine cease firing artillery at the plant, but Ukraine has not stopped. More recently, Ukraine has now begun publicly claiming it is Russia firing its own people in that plant to create a false flag excuse to use tactical nukes against Ukraine. Russia has repeatedly and publicly decried the shelling of the plant and has repeatedly and publicly warned of radiation catastrophe if Ukraine continues firing at the plant. Russia raised the issue with the UN Security Council, and Russia asked the International Atomic Energy Agency to come to the plant immediately to see for itself who is actually firing against the plant. The UN Security Council did exactly nothing. The IAEA responded to Russia this week, telling them they may be able to send someone maybe in September. You heard that right. Maybe in September. The Hal Turner radio show has been warning the public for almost 2 weeks that if Ukraine hits a sensitive area of the plant, it could cause a reactor meltdown and explosion, sending plumes of radiation into the atmosphere and into Europe, creating an utter catastrophe. We also reported prevailing winds would carry the radiation to the United States within about 10 days and cover the entire country about 4 days later. We even published a scientific model showing where local prevailing winds would carry the radiation within Europe if a leak were to take place between August 11th and 15th, 2022. That model appears below. We even published a scientific model showing where local prevailing winds would carry the radiation within Europe if a leak were to take place between August 11th and 15th. That model appears below. The lack of response by the UN Security Council and lackadaisical attitude of the IAEA is confounding. It makes no sense to any rational thinking person unless it is deliberate. Now, we seem to have our answer. Tobias Elwood, MP, British parliamentarian, said Friday night, any deliberate damage to the Ukrainian nuclear reactor with a possible radiation leak would be a violation of NATO Article 5. A similar statement was made by Adam Kinzinger, a member of the House of Representatives. He's a member of the January 6th. He's a rabid anti-Trumper and a traitor to the United States. In his view, a radiation leak that will kill people in NATO countries will automatically trigger Article 5 of the alliance's charter. Now you know why, just a month ago, on July 11th, the New York City Office of Emergency Management issued a public service announcement teaching New York City residents what to do if a nuclear bomb detonated in the city. They said, go inside, shower, and listen to the radio. But of course, if a nuclear blast occurred, there might not be any inside to go to. The water would be cut off, so you couldn't shower, and communication would be destroyed, so you wouldn't be able to tune in. Now you know also why a month ago, a Department of Homeland Security began distributing large posters in shopping malls around New Jersey, warning shoppers what to do in case of an irradiation emergency. It's because they have planned this outcome all along. And right this minute, as you read this article, it's going to take to get this whole thing off is some Ukrainian Nazi firing an artillery shell into the right spot at the plant, and everything from that moment is on autopilot. The artillery blast hits and causes a leak. NATO blames Russia, invokes Article 5. Russia is then facing an existential threat and unleashes its nukes. NATO returns nuke fire. Each side goes all in. Don't be any way to control or stop everything, because NATO will not stop, and Russia, facing a threat to its very existence, cannot stop. Hal Turner, editorial opinion. Now the plan is out for all to see. It's the West that has supplied Ukraine with advanced and longer-range weapons to use against Russia. It is the West that has imposed economic sanctions upon Russia, far worse than those Congress imposed on Japan prior to World War II, which prompted Japan to attack the United States. Every step taken by the U.S. and its vassal NATO partners have been specifically designed to escalate the fighting between Ukraine and Russia and create an excuse for NATO to enter the situation. Now Ukraine is using Western-supplied weapons to attack a nuclear power plant inside their own country, and the West says that if there's a radiation leak from the plant, that will automatically trigger NATO Article 5 collective self-defense. Well, no, it won't. Ukraine is not a member of NATO. Worse, it's Ukraine attacking the nuclear power plant. So if a radiation leak occurs, it will have been Ukraine that caused it, not Russia. And it will have been the U.S. and NATO who have facilitated it by arming Ukraine. Does NATO plan on invoking Article 5 to attack itself? Because if a radiation leak happens, it's 99% the fault of the U.S. and NATO. They're supplying Ukraine with the weapons being used to target the nuclear power plant. Check it out. We are in a grim situation. Back right after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, there are several aspects of the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which is going to do nothing to reduce inflation, that are being attacked by Republicans, conservatives, and anyone who's got their head screwed on right. Here are a couple of stories about it. Republicans launch ads attacking Dems for Biden Inflation Reduction Act. Launch an ad targeting a Democrat who voted for the $740 billion health care, climate, and tax bill. A $750,000 ad buy from the Congressional Leadership Fund is aimed at Representative Jared Golden, Democrat of Maine, for voting for the legislation known as the Inflation Reduction Act. Prices are up, a narrator says in the 30-second ad. The economy is weak. Maine families are drowning. But instead of helping, Jared Golden cast one of the deciding votes for Biden's new massive spending bill that will make inflation even worse. Tax hikes for nearly everyone, and up to 87,000 new IRS agents who can harass the middle class. Times are tough. When Maine families needed a lifeline, Jared Golden threw us an anchor. The ad highlights several attack lines most popular in polling, including the legislation tax provisions and the hiring of new IRS agents. Golden is in a tough reelection fight in the general against former Representative Bruce Poliquin, a Republican. In addition, Golden's congressional district voted for former President Trump by 6 points in 2020. Trump has slammed the legislation and called for Democrats to vote against it. should be called the Inflation Expansion Act, he said. Adds 87,000 guns, gun-carrying IRS agents to control and harass you and your family. Meanwhile, Republicans are expected to continue using the legislation in their campaign to win back Congress in the fall. Expect to see millions in advertising attacking Democrats, a GOP strategist said. We'll see a lot more of these ads in the coming month. They are effective. And every Democrat supported this bill, including, sad to say, Joe Manchin. That was the single most disappointing thing Joe Manchin has done. I was admiring him and even describing him as having a backbone of steel. Well, it turned out to be a rubber band. Meanwhile, Inflation Reduction Act nightmare targets life-saving meds. Get this. President Biden returned from vacation in South Carolina this week to sign the Inflation Reduction Act into law. The country would have been better off had he stayed at the beach. The IRA includes a combination of massive tax increases, innovation-destroying price controls, and debt-funded spending commitments. That might be music to the ears of Democrats, but for American households struggling with spiraling prices, the future has rarely looked so dim. The new spending package comes at a moment of widespread pessimism about the future of the U.S. economy. According to a Harvard Caps Harris poll released in early August, we're still in August, 84% of voters believe the nation is either in a recession or soon will be. A recent Gallup survey found economic confidence is lower than it's been in over a decade. So why are Democrats raising taxes, and not just on the rich, as the president's party maintains? An analysis by the Joint Committee on Taxation estimates the law will hike taxes on Americans earning $200,000 a year and less by more than $16 billion in 2023. Americans earning $200,000 a year and less by more than $16 billion in 2023. Remember Biden saying no one who earns less than $400,000 a year is going to have a penny of increase in their taxes? The bill's new minimum corporate tax, meanwhile, would hamstring some of the nation's most vital industries. The JCT, Joint Committee on Taxation, expects half the revenue generated from the new tax to come from the manufacturing sector. What do Democrats plan to spend all this taxpayer money on? The bulk of it, nearly $370 billion, will go toward climate and environmental policies. Climate change is not even among the top dozen political priorities the public would like to see addressed by Congress, according to a Pew Research Center study from earlier this year. Actually, I don't think it's even in the top 20. The bill also devotes $64 billion to extending the more generous subsidies for Obamacare coverage put in place as part of the March 2021 American Rescue Plan Act. These subsidies are scheduled to expire at the end of 2025, but they were also supposed to expire this year. So it's likely they'll continue indefinitely, leaving taxpayers on the hook for more than Democrats, far more than Democrats have let on. If the subsidies are made permanent, they'll cost $248 billion over the next decade, according to the Congressional Budget Office, which, by the way, is very authoritative and objective and reliable. That tab would consume much of the deficit reduction Democrats have promised the IRA will deliver. Then there are prescription drug pricing reforms the IRA will soon impose. Starting in 2026, the government will be allowed to negotiate the price Medicare pays for 10 medicines. It can dictate the price Medicare pays for 15 in 2027 and 28, and then 20 in 29. Drugs that could be ensnared by the program include small molecule drugs that have been on the market for 9 years without generic competition, and biologics that have been available for 13 years without biosimilar competition. This kind of misguided price control scheme has been shown to chill innovation and reduce drug access elsewhere in the world. Consider Japan's recent experience. For decades, it was among the world's top producers of cutting-edge medicine. As recent as the 1980s, Japan generated nearly one-third of all breakthrough pharmaceuticals. After the Japanese government implemented price controls, however, the country's contribution to global drug innovation shrank dramatically. A study from the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation found that Japan's share of global value added to the pharmaceutical industry declined 70% between 1995 and 2018. Price controls systematically deprived the pharmaceutical sector of the resources it needs to take big financial risks on future cures and treatment. The IRA imposes drug price controls as a means of generating revenue for other progressive priorities. But this is the worst kind of short-term thinking. Democrats are depriving future patients of life-saving medicine so they can enact a spending bill the vast majority of Americans never asked for and that our country cannot afford. Very nicely said.
Between national security and criminal cases.
And this is Kash Patel about the Mar-a-Lago raid.
That this is going on pursuant to a national security investigation, which takes it out of the criminal division and into the national security division where I used to work. And the receipts that are now becoming publicly available show vague descriptions of things because the government is likely going to come in and say some of the stuff was classified, but it doesn't seem to be the case when Donald Trump issued sweeping declassification orders on multiple occasions, both as president on multiple times. So that's going to be a distinction that we need to watch for, and it's incumbent upon the government, the DOJ, to tell us what happened.
Okay, so you just touched on something that I want to dig into here with you, which is the declassification process and what your position was at the time and whether or not you were involved, because we know there's a procedure that has to take place. The president can't just, you know, sort of wave over a bunch of boxes and say this is all declassified. Can you take us through the process where these documents were declassified by this president?
Yeah, so the normal process, and I was the deputy, you know, there's multiple occasions, but I think I was serving as deputy director of national intelligence. If we needed to declassify through the normal chain of command for lower level employees, we'd have to go through a rigorous process to do that procedurally. But the president of the United States is and always been the ultimate unilateral classification authority to classify and declassify. If he says something is declassified, that's it. Then it's declassified. He issued a strong statement in October 2020 declassifying all Russiagate and all Hillary Clinton documents, and that's up on, you know, publicly available. And then at the end of his administration in December and January, he felt so much more information needs to be declassified. He declassified whole sets of documents that should have come out. Now, the GSA has since come out, the government search administration, said they mistakenly packed some boxes and moved them to Mar-a-Lago. That's not on the president. That's on the National Archives to sort that material out. They cannot prosecute him for intentionally, even if it was classified, which is highly unlikely to be issued these sweeping orders, like we went through with the Hillary Clinton saga. They'll never meet the burden of intent because the president didn't pack it up and take it himself. The GSA has said they did it and they made a mistake. And that should have been really the end of it. It should have been a cordial subpoena where, at most, where they said, okay, we just need this and we'll get the rest back to you. I mean, President Obama and President Clinton still have classified materials in their possession in their homes that they have not released to this day per the National Archives.
So are you saying that these particular documents that were at Mar-a-Lago were all declassified in that December-January period of what year?
I'm saying, the end of 2020 and early 2021, before the president left,
right.
I think whole sets of documents were, you know, I don't know what was shipped down there because I wasn't the GSA people moving those documents, only they do. They packed them, they admitted that they packed them, which is their job, and transported them there and stored them somewhere. So the GSA could provide a lot more clarity to us on how and what was moved, and the GSA could have worked with the Department of Justice. That would have been my move as a national security prosecutor who brought terrorism cases all the time. This is an extreme national security measure taken for what seems to be a wholly unnecessary national security approach.
All right, so you're saying the GSA packed these boxes. They've already admitted that they sent some of them there in error. So
yeah.
Then when in
That's
June,
right.
when they went in with the subpoena and they collected the boxes, apparently then, you know, according to one line of this story, somebody said, no, there's actually more here, and you need to come back for what is here because it shouldn't be here. Do you think that is what happened? Do you think, and the Secret Service individual was involved in that? Is one of the storylines that we're pursuing?
Yeah, I don't know who that individual is, but I think it was clear from President Trump's statement that I believe he put out on Truth Social that he invited whoever was there in June or whatever date we're talking about to look and have whatever they want and come back, and I'm paraphrasing, to see whatever they needed. So if that was the case, which it seems to be because the DOJ has not controverted that statement, then they could have come back because of the voluntary cooperation. I don't know. I don't have any details about that media reporting in terms of that incident.
Yeah.
But again, it seems to be, you know, there's a different way to treat people regarding classified information if you're named Hillary Clinton or James Comey versus if your name is Donald Trump. And it's just not the even-handed way to do it. It's not how we used to do it at the Department of Justice.
So do you know if there was interaction between the former president, Trump, and these investigators after that June 3rd when he came in and said, hey, let me know if you need anything. You know, we're here to cooperate. Were there subsequent attempts? Excuse me, you know, Mr. President, we need to get those boxes. Please send them by this date. Were there efforts out there to have these things retrieved in a much more less intrusive manner?
I don't know. I can't speak to that. I wasn't a witness to any of that or part of those, you know, conversations. But, you know, who could clear it up really fast? The Department of Justice. I think we tried on this date and this date and this date because they're going to have the documentation. They had FBI agents with them. And the GSA would have been there with them because they're responsible for the custodians of the document movement. They have records as well. These aren't classified records. They could put them out. They could put them out overnight if they want. They could put out the underlying information in the form if they wanted. But they're choosing not to. And for the Attorney General to come in heavy-handed last night and say, I personally signed off on the warrant, that's not the role of the Attorney General to tell the American public that. We know that. The role of the Attorney General is to tell us why in this case where it's so necessary. And they, you know, I guess the point of this whole conversation about nuclear information. Okay, let's just say that's the case. They waited 2 years to go seize this information? And if they get away with the two-year mark, how about the warrant was issued on Friday and they executed on Monday, so it was so sensitive they took the weekend off? I, as a national security prosecutor, would get these warrants and execute them the next minute. And I think you'll find every national security prosecutor will tell you the same.
I thought that was pretty damn good. Now, here's a guy who's reporting, this is a former SWAT officer, FBI raid of Trump residents, unprecedented. A veteran former police officer and former 2022 Republican candidate for Oklahoma governor said he wouldn't be surprised if the Federal Department of Justice brought charges against Donald Trump following an unprecedented raid of the former president Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida by the FBI. You don't go to this level with a person of this level if you don't or are not thinking about filing charges. You don't do it, said Dr. Mark Sherwood, a retired 24-year veteran of the Tulsa Police Department and 10-year member of the department's SWAT team. I wouldn't be surprised if some charges are filed, even if the evidence is not thoroughly vetted. The timing is curious, to say the least. You're coming into the tail end of the midterm primaries with Republicans poised to claim both chambers of Congress. As a former law enforcement officer, Sherwood served many search warrants and knows the legal process for obtaining them. What he finds highly unusual was the FBI decision to search a home of a former sitting president against all historical precedent. Sherwood told the Epoch Times, which I highly recommend, that not even the Watergate scandal that surrounded former President Richard Nixon or the impeachment of former President Bill Clinton prompted such unprecedented action. I don't know of anything else in history that reaches the same level. What we don't know is the total contents of the affidavit used to obtain the search warrant. I know there's a lot of discussion on what parts of the affidavit to release. We don't know what precipitated this acceleration leading up to the August 8th raid. Sherwood said he believes absolutely there could be compromised individuals within the FBI, but is hesitant to paint the entire agency with a broad brush. I can't get to the point where the whole batch is spoiled, a local FBI branch office did not make this decision to search Trump's home. You don't go doing this knowing the political storm that's going to follow. Federal investigators had permission to search a 45 office, all storage rooms and areas used by Trump and his staff to keep records. The search warrant pertained to any classified government or presidential record created between January 20th, 2017, when Trump took office, and January 20th, 2021, when he left the White House. That's humongous. Sherwood said search warrants are specific and limited in their scope as a rule. They have to be so specific that there can be no other resident like Trump's in the world. It has to also be very specific about what you're looking for and where it's located. He said the search warrant signed by Florida Judge Bruce Reinhart was extremely broad in scope. Many Republicans accused the DOJ of conducting a fishing expedition to dig up incriminating evidence against Trump. What information is out there that we don't know? There's a lot. The question is, how much of the information out there is true? That's up for debate. I would hope that wouldn't be the case regarding an alleged fishing expedition. That would mean the affidavit was completely falsified and that the person who did this is guilty of perjury. Every law enforcement in the land has a potential to be compromised. Nobody in the country would want to believe an entire agency is compromised. But as we all know today, there is a complete deterioration of trust in law enforcement. Part of that is pre-Donald Trump. During the raid, federal agencies, many items, including the executive grant of clemency for the conservative political consultant and lobbyist Roger Stone, and information regarding the president's fans, Emmanuel Macron. They also confiscated a handwritten note, two photo binders, a leather-bound box of documents, a potential presidential record, and three passports. Trump also claims investigators took privileged legal documents and executive materials kept in boxes and opened a safe. Grabbing passports that presumably are not part of the search, completely improper, shouldn't do it, never, Sherwood said. However, if there's evidence in plain view law enforcement believes it's part of or connected to an investigation, they can seize that. Sherwood said he views it as highly irregular that investigators turned off surveillance cameras during the raid. If it were me, I would want the camera on to protect the integrity of what I'm doing as an officer, as an agent. Sherwood said federal agents seized large swaths of evidence without vetting what they were taking. What was the threshold of proof used to obtain the search warrant? That's probably the trillion-dollar question, he said. Probable cause is a preponderance of the evidence. 51% of a crime would have been committed. It's always based on what's presented in front of a judge. The question to ascertain is whether the evidence presented is valid or not. That's a real attack point here. That is not beyond reasonable doubt. That's for court purposes to determine. He questioned the DOJ timing to launch a raid nearly 2 years after Trump's departure from office. The unclear is what's exactly in the affidavit. The DOJ is probably going to have to release some of it. He said the media is mainly responsible for stoking fear and anger on both sides. However, the seeds of unrest began during the Obama administration and the riots of 2020. He warned against any renewed act of violence that might undermine positive conservative gains. In the court of public opinion, it's a tough deal right now in today's world. It doesn't take much to get people fired up about this issue. There's going to be a lot of people rallying around this. If it's politically motivated, it will backfire and galvanize both sides, he said, further dividing the country. Let me just add that I have a fellow who knows exactly about the affidavit. I have a copy of the affidavit provided to me by Scott Bennett. So on Wednesday's show, we're going to go into this in some detail with a fellow who also has had access to the Hunter Biden laptop and its contents. So you can expect quite a sizzler on Wednesday. Meanwhile, Friday, I was invited onto Kevin Barrett's radio show, Truth Jihad Radio on Revolution Radio. Just for the last half hour, from 8:30 to 9 Central Time, Kevin and I go way back. He wanted to hear about my court case. But I was fairly astonished when Kevin came out of the closet and said he thought that I had somehow tarnished the truth movement by my stand on Sandy Hook. I want to share this with you. Since it's 30 minutes and our next segment is going to be less, I'm going to start it now and then play the rest after the break. Here we go.
Listeners, he and Alex Jones have both been targeted by defamation lawsuits by Sandy Hook self-styled survivors. And in all cases, it seems like there has never been much of a real defamation trial where Jim and or Alex could put forth a legal defense by claiming that they didn't lie and that they whatever they said, right or wrong, never rose to the standard of reckless disregard for truth. But those trials never really happened. Judges just summarily rubber-stamped the version of events of the plaintiffs. And it's really quite a travesty of justice. And now Jim is here to report on an even more bizarre sort of permutation of his case. The judge awarded Lenny Posner, the Sandy Hook survivor that was given a big defamation award last year, all Jim's book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, four different copyright versions of it, plus four different website domains. Now, none of this stuff has any clear monetary value, and there are no plans whatsoever to sell it or use it to raise any money to pay off the damages. It seems like an irrational, arbitrary, punitive measure from this judge, and I'm kind of shocked, but I imagine that, Jim, you probably feel somewhat the same way. So, hey, welcome. How are you?
Oh, Kevin, great. Yeah, thanks for featuring. Enjoyed listening to you and Rolf. I think that the timing had to be in coordination with the Alex Jones trial. It was peculiar to me how, after so long, my case had been resolved, that they would bring this motion to take just a couple of months ago. But it turns out the timing was intended to coincide with the Alex Jones trial because they were going to use it to smear not only Alex, but Sophia Smallstorm, James Tracy, Wolfgang Helbig, and me. And they knew that once they started talking about me, even if they were describing me as they did as the, in a message that was supposed to be from Paul Joseph Watson to Alex Jones, we got to stay as far as possible as we can from that batshit crazy Fetzer, that people might want to know what that batshit crazy Fetzer had to say about Sandy Hook.
So there we are. We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance
and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Continuing with my appearance on Kevin Barrett's show Friday.
The blog is jamesfetzer.org is a vast repository of information about Sandy Hook. Even if you couldn't get a hold of the book, nobody died at Sandy Hook, which faded by the wayside long ago after Dave Gaheri settled with Posner over the lawsuit. Part of his agreement was to no longer sell the book. And they were really coming after me because when Amazon banned it way back in 2015 after it had been on sale for nearly a month and sold nearly 500 copies and I released it for free as a PDF, they had to figure out a way to staunch the flow. Or a friend of mine who follows these believes it's been downloaded for free as a PDF as many as 10 million times. Now, I can't vouch for that number, but I certainly like the idea because I released it for free because I've never cared about money. I've cared about truth and getting the information out. And for any of your audience who may be unaware, I brought together 13 experts on different aspects of Sandy Hook, including six PhDs. We established a school that had been closed by 2008. It was closed with asbestos and other biohazard damage by hurricane. There'd even been floods. It's in an area that's susceptible to floods. There was even an additional in 2007, I was unaware of at the time I published a book, that there were no students or teachers there and that it was a two-day FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. One of the contributors, by the way, Paul Preston, did an interview with Sophia Smallstorm and explained about how he, as a school administrator, had supervised active shooting drills, and he was so disturbed by what he saw being broadcast from Newtown that day that he reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, all of whom confirmed to him it had been a drill, no children had been harmed, and it was done to promote gun control. That's right.
Can I briefly interrupt you here just to say that if you consider the possibility that the kind of evidence that makes it appear that the school had been closed for years with tens of thousands of people in the community who would have known that, that evidence that you've taken to accept that the school was closed could have been fabricated, and it's vastly more likely that that's the case as opposed to tens of thousands of people all keeping their mouth shut about a school being closed that they all knew about.
No, Kevin, that's just wrong. It was what Sophia said. It was a capstone event. It involved the whole community. My conjecture is that Newtown got over $100 million to conduct this event. It was about 6 years in the planning. The families were all synthetic. Most of them are not even married to one another. The kids were fictions. They're made up in various ways. The one over of which I was being sued, Noah Posner, was actually a fiction made out of photographs of the actual son of the man who came here and testified under the name of Leonard Posner, but his real name is Reuben Vavner. His name is Michael Vavner. And they used photographs of Michael Vavner, who was very telegenic as a child, to be the Noah Posner, who was the subject of the death certificate that I was sued over. So, the answer is no. And I have done so much research on this, Kevin. And believe me, I know whereof I speak. And the community, key players in the community include the head of the Board of Education, the head of the police department, the town attorney, the head of the bank. I mean, all the head of the fire department, the town clerk, who happened to be married, by the way. I mean, I'm just telling you, this whole thing was very much a community affair. Even at that, when Alex Jones had one, I think it was actually Dan Bongino in his early days, since it was way back in 2012, who was going to neighbors who said they thought it was odd there were any students there because the school had been closed for years. So the answer to your question is emphatically no. We established this school had been closed by 2008. If you think six PhDs and seven others can't figure out whether school was open or closed, Kevin, I really...
Well, I just happen to know that whenever schools are very much public knowledge, that if you go to real estate listings online, you can find everything you want to know about the schools. It's the first thing everybody wants to know about when they're looking at places to move, that thousands and thousands of people would have been looking and thinking about moving to and from Sandy Hook. There's no way to hermetically seal off that community, and so that at a minimum, tens of thousands of people would have known what schools were open and what schools were closed. There's no way you could possibly conduct this kind of a fraudulent event like you're saying at such a school that closed for 4 years. It's utterly preposterous, and I think you've been fooled by Cass Sunstein's friends who have hoodwinked you and Alex and other people into saying things that have destroyed your credibility and destroyed the credibility of the truth movement in general.
Well, Kevin, I'm sure glad to see you coming out honestly about this, because I find this quite shocking. I've always wondered why you seem to be sitting on the fence about Sandy Hook. Makes me wonder if you even ever bothered to read the book, because there's no doubt about it. Even participants in the drill have read the book. They like the book because it's honest and it's truthful, and they have no malice toward me because they recognize I've simply been trying to expose the truth here. Unlike others like Alex Jones, or they don't have much enthusiasm for Sophia or James Tracy, and Wolfgang seems to have overplayed his hand, but for me, they bear no malice. And I'm just telling you, Kevin, you are the one who's been allowed to play yourself. I'm really kind of embarrassed by this. When you look at all the evidence I amassed, and we even had the FEMA manual for the drill, for God's sake. We had the FBI report showing no deaths in Newtown for murder and non-negligent manslaughter for 2012. That's the FBI. We got the official account from the Stephen Sadinsky III, the Danbury State's attorney, that fails to call—he took a year to do his research. He fails to establish a causal nexus between the purported shooter, Adam Lanza, and the victims he's supposed to have shot. With regard to his mother, no fingerprints on the .22 caliber rifle. With regard to the 20 kids and 6 adults, they found 150 slugs, which they could not match to the weapon. So it was an utter forensic failure. If there's ever been one in like this in history, it would be astonishing. There are no class photos for any kids from Sandy Hook Elementary. You can't find a bake sale. You can't find a teacher of the year. It's not there because it doesn't exist. And the fact is, according to Sadinsky, there were 489 students there. Well, if you subtract 20, that meant they had to evacuate 469. We don't even have a list of the enrollment. Where are the names of the 469. Kevin, you have just been suckered into this. I'm really kind of shocked and more than slightly disappointed to hear you making these fantastic claims. I go out of my way. I'm very thoroughgoing. I don't make any claims I cannot prove, and I can prove every damn thing I've just said here, which you, alas, cannot.
What I was disappointed was that you never got a chance. You never got a chance to actually make these kinds of arguments or any arguments at all in court, because there was the summary judgment prevented there from being an actual jury trial about the facts of the case. And so that's really where, you know, my sympathy for your position really comes in, is because that the way the trial was run, and similarly with the Alex Jones trial, it was clear that there was never going to be an actual jury trial about the facts of the case. And you know, maybe that's partly the bad defense strategy that you chose, but I think it's obvious that the court didn't want there to be any such trial. So on that point, I would agree with you that the stuff that you're saying, as much as I don't accept the evidence for it as being strong enough to prove that it's true or even close, that should have been aired in court. And clearly, well, the judges didn't want that to happen. And so that's way on you know, way on your side.
I'll come back to the trial, but this shows how out of touch you are with research. I enlisted Brian Davidson, a PI. I did an interview with him about research techniques online, and he said even photographs. So I just threw him an anonymous photograph of a crime scene vehicle in the parking lot, asked him to track it down. You know, I tracked it down to the magazine where it originally appeared, but he tracked it down to the Connecticut State Police files where he found a veritable bonanza. They've been taking photographs of every aspect of the case. They were running the whole thing behind the scene, and they took photographs of all of it. He has photographs down the hallway where there were supposed to be new bodies. There's nobody there. His photographs inside classroom 10. There's supposed to have been a stack of bodies there that were left overnight, which was absurd on his face. There's no blood, no pockmarks, nothing there. And the Connecticut State Police not only have hundreds of these photographs, but they've removed all the metadata, so they can't be introduced in court. But this one photograph is so stunning. And if anyone goes to my blog, which now since they've taken jamesfetzer.org, you have to go to jameshfetzer.org and look at my most recent pieces about the Alex Jones trial in the Sandy Hook Parents, and you'll see the photograph I'm talking about. It is in and of itself definitive that this was a fraud, because you got the crime scene vehicle there in the Sandy Hook parking lot. You got crime scene tape up already. You got Wayne Carver leaning against the wall with his arms folded. But the windows of classroom 10 are not damaged. They would, after the event, be shot out, which means this photograph was either taken before the event took place altogether, or if it was taken after the event allegedly took place, they hadn't finished faking the proof. Kevin, you just have not done your homework.
I just got to be emphatic about this. Can I ask you a question about the police report that describes in great detail the police finding the bodies of the children and some wounded children who were then taken away in ambulances and so on and so forth? That police report, let me finish. The police report describes the police finding the body of Adam Lanza, the shooter, or the person that they will later identify as him, handcuffed. So that is one of several kind of bizarre, one might call them anomalies, in that very detailed police report of what the police found when they entered the Sandy Hook School and found all the bodies of these children who had apparently been sort of rushed into a bathroom and were then shot while they were squashed together in an extremely crowded fashion in this bathroom. Anyway, I don't know if you've read that police report, but I'm wondering why would they produce a police report with such bizarre anomalies as Adam Lanza being found shot dead and in handcuffs and then claiming that he shot himself, if indeed this whole thing was a complete fabrication?
Well, why wouldn't you just take that at face value and say something obviously is terribly wrong here? The fact is, you're believing words. For a guy who writes a lot, you ought to realize you can write up any damn scenario you want. They had a script for Sandy Hook. They spent a lot of time working it out, but it was done in a sloppy way. There were lots of glitches. That's why they've had to resort to the courts to try to slam dunk, you know, home by abusing the law. None of these trials are legitimate. None of them established that anybody had died at Sandy Hook. I sought to interview in all three of Alex Jones' trials, making the point that there'd never been a determination that anybody had died in any of these judicial proceedings. They were all settled on procedural grounds. That was also true for Alex Jones. He was found guilty for failing to come forward with discovery. Now, Robert Barnes is quite a brilliant guy, has given sensational critiques of that. He's been in the courtroom. He said it was unlike any courtroom he'd ever seen. They had three different cameras there. He got the sense it was a made-for-TV movie. Well, I think he's got it exactly right. Now, yeah. if you find a defendant guilty on procedural grounds, it's nevertheless obligatory upon the plaintiffs to come forward and present the evidence that they suffered the injustices over which they were suing. That was finesse. They just leaped right over it. And indeed, with Neil Heslin, it would have been absurd. We had Wayne Carver, the medical examiner, declared at his press conference, the parents were not allowed to come into contact with their children, but were identified on the basis of photographs, which I've submitted forever. It was very appropriate since they, for the most part, they only existed in the form of photographs. Noah Posner being an illustration where Mona Alexis Presley has found further reason to believe some of the parents used photographs of themselves when they were children. But Neil Heslin claims he held his dying son in his arms. Well, they can't both be true. Either Carver is lying when he said the parents weren't allowed to come in contact with their children, or Neil Heslin was lying when he said he held Jesse in his arms. But the fact of the matter is, while they can't both be true, they can't both be
Carver false. One would expect lots of erroneous information coming from both media and officials in this kind of situation in the heat of the moment.
Christ almighty, are you this ignorant, Kevin? That's Wayne Carver giving his press conference. It's all recorded on video, saying the parents weren't allowed to come into contact. That's Neil Heslin in a lawsuit prior to this one, declaring that he held his son Jesse in his arms when he died.
I would tend to believe Neil and not Wayne. Wayne gave a very bizarre press conference, and you know, he looked like he was on drugs or in a state of shock. And I wouldn't necessarily expect any accurate information or a whole lot of it from that press conference.
Wayne Carver, because he was a state of Connecticut medical examiner with a glue that had the whole thing together. I mean, it's just ridiculous. He admitted in Las Vegas, according to one report, when people approached him, that it had just been a drill, and it had just been a drill. The fact that you'd have porta potty set up in advance, they'd have pizza and bottled water at the firehouse, there'd be a sign everyone must check in. It says right in the manual, everyone must check in with a controller so they can pay him off. Yet everyone there wearing name tags on lanyards. I've asked police about whether this resembled a crime scene, and they found it was ludicrous. Yet parents bringing children to the scene. No parent is going to bring a child to the scene of a child shooting massacre. And then the day of the event, there was no surge of EMTs into the building. There was no string of ambulances to rush the little bodies off to hospitals. They didn't even call a medevac chopper, which they do even for drills. They put out a triage tarp, but there were no bodies dead or wounded put on the triage tarps.
How do you know all of this, Jim, when there are official police reports describing children being taken off in ambulances? What makes you say that didn't happen?
Because I've followed this damn thing. That Victims and Drive, which was the only way in and out, Kevin, was so clogged you couldn't have got an emergency vehicle in there if you wanted to. Not only that, but the police said the evacuation was taking place at specific locations and times. We have dash cam footage for those locations and times, and there's no evacuation taking place. The school had been abandoned. It was in terrible shape. We've had all kinds of confirmation since. We put up videos where 10 months or so, and school teachers were saying that's what they do with abandoned schools. They use them for storage. In classroom 10, all the furniture was pushed up against the wall, against the windows. It bore no semblance of functional school. It wasn't decorated for Christmas. This was 14 December. There are no Christmas or Hanukkah decorations there. And as I told you before, you go back over the history, there are no class photographs of students who graduated from Sandy Hook. There are none. And if you dig in, you'll find none of the teachers who allegedly taught there, with one exception, even had a teaching credential. And you'll dig into it, you'll find like Scarlett Lewis and Jesse Haslin are not even married, Kevin. You have just blown it here so bad. Most of these families don't even know each other. this was a totally fabricated event, and I guarantee you, I know whereof I speak.
Okay, well, we've talked about this many times, but what we haven't talked about is what happened in court this week. And I think we both tend to agree that this bizarre judge's order taking your intellectual property supposedly to satisfy a monetary judgment when that intellectual property could not possibly be used to actually satisfy that monetary judgment, even in part, is just bizarre and extremely unjust and raises questions about the court. So am I getting this right, that actually they seized your intellectual property and they're not trying to sell it, they're not trying to convert it into cash that could be used to reduce the judgment against you, they're simply just taking it, giving it to Lenny Posner, and that's not reducing your judgment by one penny? How can they justify that?
Kevin, in my opinion, they can't. The whole thing is a sham. You're absolutely right. Here you're on firm ground. It's a statutory law. You cannot take anything but money or something having financial value to satisfy a financial judgment. I got 1.1 million in financial judgments against me. But not only is it the case that he's not using it for that purpose, he's actually estoppel. There's a judicial doctrine of estoppel that having won a lawsuit, you cannot reverse your position in order to benefit from that lawsuit financially. It's called estoppel. That means he could not judicially take the book, or he could not take the blogs. I mean, look, he took four domain names. I didn't even own any of these. JamesFetzer.org, JamesFetzer.net, FalseFlags.org, FalseFlags.net. I own none of them. Dave Gaharry, home, JamesFetzer.org. But I own none of them. In the book, I thought that Dave owned the book, but it turned out he'd never formally copyrighted it. So they argued that I had the common law copyright. Now, think about it. I was sued for three sentences in a 440-page book that were found by the court to be defamatory. And the fact is, the court excluded my evidence systematically from the beginning. He would not allow me to introduce all the evidence I had in this massive compilation. I wasn't allowed to introduce the FEMA manual, the FBI, all that. The judge just set it aside as unreasonable. It's got this peculiarity in Wisconsin, Kevin, that under summary judgment rules of Wisconsin, the judge is entitled to make decisions about proposed facts by a party and decide whether or not they're reasonable in his subjective opinion. And if he declares they're unreasonable, he can just set them aside as though they did not exist. You can only have a summary judgment if there are no disputed facts. But in this case, my position and that of the legal fiction Leonard Posner could not have been more opposite. I was asserting it was a FEMA drill. Nobody died. I had the manual. I had the FBI report. I had the problems with the official account, the whole bit, all the correspondence of events on the ground, with what you expect if it were a FEMA event, because it's standard for FEMA exercise. They provide refreshments and restrooms. It's standard. They identify everyone on color-coded name tags on manuals. And, of course, parents would bring children to a FEMA drill because they treat it as a festive occasion, when no parent would bring a child to a child shooting massacre. And then the events on the ground, no surgeon.
Parents would bring a child to a FEMA drill purporting to be a famous child shooting. When those children grow up, aren't they going to start scratching their heads over, wait a minute, my parents took me to a FEMA drill and now everybody believes that it was a real massacre, but I know that it wasn't? Wouldn't that put them in kind of a difficult position?
Well, they're kids. It depends on the age. Actually, there are any number of participants who'd like to have their lives back because they're having to continue to live the lie that this was a real shooting when it was just a charade.
How many of them have confessed or talked about this? I mean, even CIA people like David Sanchez Morales would spout off about their participation in JFK assassination.
Yeah, but they signed 10-year non-disclosure agreements, which are about to expire. So we may have that happening. I don't know what it would take to convince you. I would have thought long since you'd realize it was a FEMA drill, since I've had so much evidence and I've presented it so many times. But let me return to the court case. I was puzzled as to why they were making this sudden rush to take control of my blog and the book. when he couldn't do anything with it. I mean, you're quite right. I mean, he can't, and he's even judicially estoppeled. And I had all this in my briefs and my motion for reconsideration because a gross error of the law had been committed here in the motion to stay because I have a petition before the United States Supreme Court. It's going to be heard in conference on the 28th. I'll know by October 3rd whether or not they're actually going to issue a writ and get all the documents and records from Wisconsin. I believe it's going to happen because I'm raising a question about the whole summary judgment methodology that allows the judges, based on their subjective opinion, to exclude evidence to determine facts or not facts because they don't agree with them. I mean, it's absurd. In the appellate court, the review of my appeal of this case, they said in consecutive paragraphs, it's reasonable to believe Adam Lanza shot his mother, then shot 20 kids and 6 adults and blah, blah, blah. And it even said right there in the summary that Neil Heslin held his dying child in his arms. They don't note that Wayne Carver had said that the parents weren't allowed to come into contact with their children. And then in the following paragraph, they say it's not reasonable to believe it was a FEMA drill. A two-day FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Well, how could two positions be more opposite? And yet they claim there were no disputed facts here because a judge is entitled to simply suppress those he doesn't like. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. So when I got through all this and figured out what the hell had happened to me because it was so disparate from what I'd expected of a summary judgment, or from everything I've read, you're supposed to take all of the defendant's assertions as true and then ascertain whether or not the plaintiff who's suing agrees with all of those assertions by the defendant. And if he does not agree, then it has to go to a jury trial to resolve the disputed facts. But in this case, the judge was simply able to put all my facts to one side and declare there were no disputed facts and rule in favor of the plaintiff, even though I had, of all things, two forensic document experts who agreed with me on my position, which is a standard way in which courts of law, you decide on the authenticity of documents. You get document experts. Well, I didn't have just one. I had two, which he simply set aside as unhelpful, even though the whole case was focused on the authenticity of this document. So he just set aside the document. I mean, it's absurd. It's a legal absurdity from beginning to end. It was only after I was turned down by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. They wouldn't even review that I realized that there was something wrong with the methodology used in Wisconsin. It came out not only in relation to the Court of Appeals decision, which was so blatant, but in the circuit court judge's opinion on the post-verdict motions, where he was just...
I'll be right back after this break, and we'll take your calls if Mitchell can field them.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I think you can sense my exasperation with Kevin. I mean, he had always been equivocal. I could never understand why he wouldn't come out and agree that Sandy Hook had been a fraud. I mean, the evidence is simply overwhelming. Notice, for example, he's willing to buy the idea that a police report says Adam Lanza was handcuffed and yet he shot himself. I mean, that shows that the police report cannot possibly be true. And yet he wants to suggest that this is proof of its authenticity. I mean, give me a break, man. I mean, you don't have to have taught logic for 35 years to understand that this is a fiasco. This is stupid beyond belief. Now, there are just 3 or 4 minutes left here to polish it off, and I'm going to play that last, but open the lines to callers, 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. I'd love to get your reaction. The whole interview is on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. You can go there. There are quite a few comments, most of which, I must say, are rather unflattering to Kevin. But I was just blown away. I was just blown away. So here we go. Let's get that last couple of minutes. And if we have any callers, I'll take them. But if not, there's a story about why they want us to eat bugs. It's got nothing to CO2. It turns out there's something in these bugs in their exoskeleton that can bring about your death. So this is bad. Hang on. We're going to play the rest of this. And my guess is this is Bruce in Texas. But we'll find out. Here we go. The last couple minutes.
Explaining again and again that what I was saying was unreasonable. I did not realize at the time that that entitled him to set all my evidence aside and just discount it because it was unreasonable. Now, what I have done then is contrast what happens in Wisconsin with what happened in Texas, because Texas has a proper summary judgment. In my case, it would have either been thrown out or sent to a jury trial. I would have been dealt with appropriately, but in Wisconsin, you can violate my 7th Amendment right to a trial by jury and my 14th Amendment right to equal justice under the law to due process, which is supposed to be uniform across all the states. It turns out that this summary judgment is a problem for the American judicial system. I teed it up for them to knock it out of the park. I predict they're going to take my case and they're going to rule in my favor and reverse all this.
When do you find out about when the Supreme Court will decide or not to decide to take up the case?
October 3rd.
October 3rd. Okay. Well, I wish you the best with that, Jim. And I share your outrage about your being barred from providing your side of the story. And I think you actually would have had a good defense, regardless of whether your version of Sandy Hook is right or not, simply by putting forward the evidence that led you to say the things that you've said. But you're never allowed to do that, and that is definitely unjust. So anyway, keep up the great work, Jim Fetzer. I do admire your courage and seduction.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.
Thanks so much, my friend. Real pleasure. Well, there you have it. We do have a caller standing by. Paul, I'm delighted to have you here. What's your take on all of the above? I mean, give me your thoughts.
So I'm a little confused about what you were pointing out. I heard the clip you played, but what was it you were saying about Kevin and what he said or what he concluded?
Oh, you didn't hear the whole thing. Kevin said Kevin said he thought I had been played and that I had damaged the truth movement, discredited myself in the truth movement because of my stance on Sandy Hook.
What?
Yeah. Paul, I was floored. I was just floored. I was just floored.
That's like saying that I discredit myself by talking about flat earth or that nuclear weapons don't exist. You know, we can draw distinctions between topics at hand, right? Can't we? We can discuss what we discuss. And, you know, I hate ad hominem attacks, you know, where, okay, so he did this or he said that. He doesn't believe we landed on the moon. You know, he doesn't believe planes were used. I mean, you know, there's still people, Jim, that actually believe the narrative that they were told about just about every single thing. I was just talking to a friend of mine in Arkansas, and he was mentioning a friend of his he's known for the better part of his life. And he told me that this man is a very successful businessman, and he believes almost everything he hears from the media. So, you know, what can you say?
Well,
it's insane.
What floors me, I mean, this is Kevin Barrett. I did for a year and a half his show, False Flag Weekly News. This is a guy, an expert on false flags, and he believes Sandy Hook was real, Paul? I mean, give me a break.
I'll tell you another thing that wasn't real. Have you seen Miles Mathis' paper on Anne Heche? Sophia Smallstorm thought so much of it that she put it up on her site, despite her past negative experiences with him, but she was impressed by the paper. And so was I. It's 15 pages, which is a little bit longer than usual, but it's completely devastating. And it's just like, you know, what you did with Charlottesville, where there's two different challengers. For God's sake, they use two different minis. And, you know, the shot that you see where it supposedly burned or it's on fire, he thinks, and I believe it when you see the photo, it's not even burn marks. They use tire black. There's a product called tire black, you know, make your tires nice and black. They just probably smeared that all over the car. The story is so full of ridiculous holes that you could drive a truck through. And it's like these people, they don't care anymore. They do these ham-handed operations, and people just believe because it's on the news and, you know, move on.
That's extremely interesting, Paul. I haven't talked about Anne Heche. The whole thing seemed real strange. I mean, superficially, it appeared as though they'd taken control of the car because there's so many computerized components that's easy to do with modern automobiles. And then my inference was it was because she'd participated in making of this movie exposing pedophilia entitled The Girl in Room 13, that it was punishment or retribution for her participation in the expose. But I've also heard that she was actually conscious. You can see in one photo I have of her lying face down on a stretcher, you can see all of her hair. If there had been a fire, her hair would have burned off almost immediately. She doesn't appear to be suffering from burn marks. I've heard another report. I'm not able to verify that she leaned up. She sat up and they pushed her back down and closed the body back. Tell me what Miles Mathis says. Give me the whole thing, Paul. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, just I urge you to read it. I mean, I can't do it justice, but yeah, it's clearly fake. Okay, just the idea that there's a helicopter shot as she's being loaded, and there are all these ambulances, and then she pops up out of the body bag, and you don't even know it's her. Okay, there's no way to identify her.
Right,
there's just some person in this bag who pops up and, like, you know, almost like they need air or something, and they just shove her back, and it's the whole thing is fake. She's not dead. I guarantee it. you know, she's probably sipping Mai Tais on the beach somewhere with Jeffrey Epstein and, you know.
What is Miles' take on the motivation behind all this elaborate fraud?
Well, he gets to that at the end, and, you know, he said it's just speculation, you know, because he said a lot of my readers, you know, a lot of the readers urged him to do the paper. He said he didn't want to do it. He covered that right away, but he said, okay, let's take a look at this. And in the end, you know, he says, well, you know, a lot of people want to know why, and, you know, I can only speculate. But he thinks it's just part of this operation they're doing all the time of distraction. All right, what do they want us to? What are they distracting us from? And of course, it's the economic situation, the migrant invasion, the vaccine death count. Right? They just give you celebrity distraction, and they've been doing it for a very long time, as you well know. And if they don't give you celebrity distraction, they give you a mass shooting distraction, or they give you some political scandal. You know, it's just this back and forth, back and forth. And, you know, I believe that's as good a reason as any.
Yeah, well, that's very plausible, Paul. We have three main stories today, of course. The first about the Ukrainian shelling of the nuclear power plant, the largest in Europe, where it now appears they want to bring about a meltdown deliberately so they can invoke Article 5. The idea of going to war with Russia is so stupid because Russia has far superior military equipment and can clean NATO's clock. But as Putin has observed, there are going to be no winners here. I mean, it's going to be devastating. The idea that, you know, they'd bring about a contamination and then it would blow over European countries and then it would be regarded as an attack on NATO. I mean, this is really, truly bizarre. Then I have a guy who's going to come on Wednesday you're going to want to hear talking about the affidavit for the Mar-a-Lago raid and how outrageous it all is. And this is someone who actually has even had access to Hunter Biden's laptop. Think of what a time we're going to have discussing that, Paul. And then, of course, there's Kevin having me on to talk about my court case in Sandy Hook, which was a revelation to me that he thinks that I have been played over Sandy Hook, in spite of the fact that, you know, I point out 13 contributors, including 6 PhDs, and you think we can't figure out whether the school was closed by 2008? I mean, give me a break.
I mean, listen, to me, the case was done. I mean, before you, I saw Sophia, you know, present her unraveling Sandy Hook in five dimensions. I was done at that point. But when you just do, you know, when you talk about the porta potties and the names on lanyards and the sign, everybody must check in. That's it. Okay, I don't need any more after that. You know, it's like I used to tell people, and I still possess almost all these DVDs. Within probably 3 to 4 years, maybe five at the most, but within the 3 to 4 years, I owned 10 different DVDs on 9/11. Okay, in other words, I actively went out and I purchased the physical copy. I just didn't watch stuff, okay? So, I mean, I was thoroughly on firm footing when I discussed that, just like I am on most things. I just don't dabble around and say, okay, this is my opinion. I do put a little time into something as a rule. But I got to tell you, most of these DVDs that I watched, the points they made, you could process them in 5 minutes. Like, okay, I'm done. I don't need to see any more. When I saw Boeing Gone, which is 3 DVDs, okay, almost 5 hours, Boeing Gone, a nice little play on words, I was done in 20 minutes. Right?
You're talking about 9/11 and no plane at the Pentagon.
Right, when they focus right off the bat, they start talking about deceleration. Deceleration is an immutable law of physics, okay? Deceleration is something that there's no way around, and they showed a few examples, you know, just simple basic examples of something running into something else. And, you know, then they showed that there's no deceleration of the plane, and as you said so many times on air, the plane disappears into the building nose to tail at the same frame per second speed, which is traveling through the air, thereby implying that concrete and steel provide no more resistance in the air. How long did that take? That's 2 minutes?
Yeah, good, Paul, good. Listen, I'm just delighted you're here and we're going to have so much time. We do have Brian from Missouri standing by. Let me bring him in and then I'll get back to you. Brian, join the conversation.
You know, when you played that clip on Kevin, it just made my jaw drop. And what is in my mind is something went wrong with Veterans Today. It used to be a website that, you know, I would religiously go to every day, and that's where I got a lot of my information on 9/11, and they were always spot on. And then something happened. You started getting all this goofiness on Trump, and they would just go on and on about Trump, like CNN, and have these stupid books about Trump. And so I had to start cherry picking the information, and Joel Olson said the same thing. You got to cherry pick when you're there. And he's part of that. And it's just like, it makes you wonder what the hell's going on with him. So that's what I had to say.
No, that's good, Brian. Paul, do you want to pick up on that? I mean, what do you think's going on with Kevin?
I don't know. I mean, it's, look, I've mentioned this before, and I just got to tell you, I experienced it again this weekend, Jim, when I got a call from an acquaintance or friend that I, you know from when I used to hang out at the coffee shop near my house. And, you know, he says, hey, come on up. We're grilling hamburgers in the parking lot, you know, to, you know, get together. And, you know, there was a bunch of people, most of them I knew, some I knew, you know, casually. And I had no agenda, but, you know, one person, you know, started talking about, oh, you know, Matt, COVID, no, I got COVID and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I started to weigh in, and didn't take long. And next thing you know, I was into it. And, you know, there's only one guy there that I exchanged texts with, and I sent him links, and he's the only guy that would even have any semblance of awareness that I do. Basically, everywhere I go, you know, I'm looking at people that just, they have no clue what's going on. And a lot of times it's because they haven't made the effort. You know, you'd be surprised, maybe you wouldn't be surprised, how often I mention such things as BitChute or Rumble or, you know, Brighteon or Revolution Radio, RBN, Speak Free Radio, so on and so on. And nobody knows, nobody, even BitChute. I'll talk about BitChute all the time, and it's amazing how many people don't know that BitChute exists as a video aggregator, just like YouTube.
Fascinating.
They don't know.
Fascinating.
So what can you do? You know, on the one hand, I want to call them names and tell them they're morons and all that. You know, and it's really, quote, not their fault, but in the end, it is their fault. It's kind of like when you see super fat people; it's totally their fault. It's what they're eating. And it's what they're not doing. They're not exercising. They're not doing any other things they should be doing.
Yeah.
So when you're stupid or when you're ignorant, I'm sorry, but it's your fault. If you have a computer, okay, you know, like a desktop or a laptop, there's no excuse for not knowing what's going on. It's right there at your fingertips.
Yeah, I think that's right. Brian, did you want to add a further thought?
Well, I know what he's talking about with BitChute, because I've got customers that I tried to get them on your information, and they'd never heard of BitChute. And a lot of it just frightens them. When they get on one of your shows on the internet, they just get so frightened, they just want to turn it off, and then they just crawl in their hole. So,
frightened.
Yeah, absolutely. I know what he's talking about. The other thing that I notice now is how difficult it is to find old information that I used to find, you know, readily on the internet. And now it's like impossible. Like me telling you about that meeting of the Israeli ambassador with Johnson. You know, Russ Winter talked about his website that he uses for finding out, you know, stuff that's difficult to find. I went on that, and there was nothing there on it. Or the 1996 ritual murder of David Rothschild, you know, by the Rothschild family, and how they went to Rupert Murdoch and said, we don't want this in Fox News, you know. And now that's just completely gone. I did find that on Russ Winter's website, but there's just so many examples of that. They've really restricted the information that we used to get.
Let me recommend Russ Winter. It's called Winter Watch, Winter Watch. Russ Winter is a really thoughtful guy. He did a marvelous critique of events right here in Wisconsin, you know, with the mowing down of the car in Mishawaka. I mean, it was just ridiculous. Paul, more thoughts from you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just thought I would add, it's just interesting. The reason I focus or I talk about BitChute is I just assume, without really any particular knowledge, I assume BitChute is a fairly large one compared to the others, like Rumble and, you know, Odyssey and Brighteon. I just think it is. I don't know. But to me, you know, like I said, going back to the personal effort that we can all make, is we don't have to do any original research, really. I mean, it's just all there done for us. I was just counting the other day, just for the fun of it, on my phone right now, and I don't know for sure, but I just happened to find out. I currently have 190 tabs open on my phone of videos and sites. And, you know, that's all on my phone. On my desktop, I probably have five windows open at any given time, and each window has probably had at least 20 to 30 tabs on it. And, you know, if I had to do a rough guesstimate, Jim, and I'm sure I'm the exception, right? But I've probably seen no less than, you know, nearly 200 plus videos on the whole virus, the corona, COVID pandemic farce. That's just on the whole virus, COVID farce. I've probably seen at least 30 or more videos on the contents of the vaccines and people's reaction to them and so forth. I mean, just BitChute alone, going back how many years, there's probably no doubt in my mind I've watched at least 400 or more videos just on BitChute on various topics. So, you know, and it's like, if I could do it, other people can, you know, do like 10 or 20 or 30 or 40, but they don't even know it exists. So this is a problem.
Yeah, and YouTube has been so censorious. I must have had 150 videos taken down, my own videos taken down from YouTube. And, of course, the guy who calls himself Leonard Posner has boasted of taking down 1,500 videos off of YouTube that were dealing with Sandy Hook, where he's dedicated himself to eliminating any discussion critical of the official narrative. And yet he's supposed to be taking my book and my blog as a way of satisfying a financial judgment against me. I mean, it's just ridiculous, Paul. And clearly it's to try to make it impossible for the public to access the information I put together through collaborative research about what did and did not happen at Sandy Hook. It's so blatant. And I'm very optimistic the court is, in fact, actually going to reverse. And I'm talking about the U.S. Supreme Court. And anyone who's interested can download my petition. You go to the docket of the United States Supreme Court and look for Fetzer v. Posner. All these cases up till now have been Posner v. Fetzer. This is now Fetzer v. Posner. And when you get to the right docket, you can download the petition for your own desktop. You can also download the amicus brief, and you can see it's been sent to conference on 28 September, and we'll have the result, knowing whether or not the court's going to hear my case on the 3rd of October. But it satisfies all the criteria that the Supreme Court uses, which are a publicly significant case, a legally significant case, a conflict between the highest courts of different states, and correcting a major error of procedure or the law. All of those, my case ranks right up there at the top. So I'm fairly optimistic. Paul, we have just a few minutes for you and Brian to get a couple more thoughts out.
Well, I can only applaud your optimism in the face of reality. I am not optimistic, as I've made clear. But, you know, anything can happen, right? You can throw a touchdown pass in the last seconds of the game, and
that reminds me of the Patriots and the Seahawks, where there was a fantastic pass, and they caught it on the 1 yard line and could easily have run it in, and instead Russell Wilson passes on the first down to give it back to the Patriots, and then they have a deliberate offside to give them room so there can't be a touchback. I mean, it was embarrassing. That was the most shocking event, where it was proof positive that the NFL is rigged. There are others who've known this forever. But the fact is, because they're not ruling directly on Sandy Hook, they're ruling on the summary judgment procedure in Wisconsin, which is grossly biased because it's an ongoing problem for every resident of Wisconsin, because the abuse of summary judgment is a major problem affecting the U.S. judiciary. And because I am a controversial defendant, and it would show that even a controversial defendant is entitled to a trial by jury, I believe they are, in fact, going to rule in my favor. But we will stand by. We will stand by, Paul. And, of course, you could very well be right. I mean, if you look at it statistically, you've got a very strong case. Actually, the judge said to me in court, even though it was apparent he hadn't even read my petition, he gave me odds of 1 in a million to be heard by the Supreme Court. I think you probably agree. But the fact is, this case is going to be irresistible to the court because it allows them to correct a longstanding problem with a case that perfectly tees it up. Brian, then I'll go back to Paul for a final. Brian.
Okay. Well, I look at the mainstream press as the Shabbatian Frankist egregore amplifier. And if they get too many people not believing things, then that screws things up for them. That's why they have Fox News. So it's possible in court they may say, well, if we don't rule right here, people will start, not believing us, and our egregore isn't going to function. So we're going to have to let Fetzer win this one. So that's how I look at it.
Thanks, Brian. Paul, you're going to get the last word today. Go ahead.
All right, so if that occurs, I will drive to Wisconsin and personally congratulate you and buy a round of drinks.
We'll have a steak dinner, Paul. We'll have a great time. I tell you, I look forward to it. I'm just delighted you and Brian called in today. I thought this was wonderful, and I was looking for some feedback, just what you might think about the Kevin thing, which has just flummoxed me. I was completely stunned and taken by surprise when he made some of those declarations. So we're at the verge. I want to encourage everyone to spend as much time as they can with their friends and loved ones. The idea that we might actually have a nuclear war with Russia is just unbelievably intimidating. I mean, I think it's going to happen. I think we have morons running NATO. Of course, we have no president of the United States. This is going to promote the new world order, I believe. They think by Russia and the U.S. wiping each other out, Israel can come forward to lead the nation, very much as Charlie Manson wanted a race war between blacks and whites, and he thought blacks would prevail because they were stronger, but they were also dumber, and they need leadership, which Charlie and his band would provide. Thank you all for being here. Support Revolution Radio. Check out my blog. Thank you.
Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
we did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and